Governor Ducey has made it clear he believes President Biden and his policies are to blame for the current situation at the southern border, which is once again seeing an influx of migrants. Some other political and law enforcement officials have also talked about how that's impacting their communities. Customs and Border Protection is reporting agents encountered nearly 172,000 migrants last month. That's a sharp increase from February. The number of unaccompanied minors is also on the rise. I'm joined by Maricopa County Sheriff Paul Penzone to talk about what he's seeing as well as other issues. And Sheriff Penzone, let's start with the border. Are you seeing any impacts of the influx of migrants at the border in your day-to-day work?
Yeah, I think the impact from my office is more so the relocation of some of the immigrants where they're being transported to communities and dropped off there. And it obviously causes concern for that particular community because they're not comfortable. They don't know what to expect. They don't have the resources maybe to address it. And they're concerned for public safety. So it's more so responsive right now relative to how it's going to affect the demand on resources and any public safety issues. My colleague on the border have bigger challenges, but I can tell you that we have had conversations and we continue to have conversations collectively as a law enforcement community to make sure that we're doing everything we can to stay ahead of this issue should it become a problem. But I think it's a little bit early to determine how it will affect us.
Based on what you're seeing from the border, how do you compare it to what we've seen other times when there have been large numbers of people massing at the border and coming into the country in terms of, you know, other times under different administrations?
Well, I mean, you know, we've seen this issue or challenge surge, and we've seen it diminish sometimes due to, you know, the actions or inactions of different administrations. But ultimately, this is not a new problem for us. We have for many years, and I'll use the term neglected, we've neglected our responsibility to do two things: to ensure that we're a safe nation, that when we have, you know, a border and that border has certain processes to cross lawfully and to be welcomed into the nation, that we're doing everything that we can to address issues like sex trafficking, human trafficking, and drug trafficking so it doesn't happen illegally across our borders. But at the same time, we're a nation that is founded in migration, that, you know, we are a melting pot and welcoming to people from all walks of life. So how do we welcome them in a lawful manner and have a thoughtful process, whether it is pursue citizenship or job opportunities or whatever it is? But ultimately, we can't continue to have borders that are porous and people entering through unlawful means, even though they are coming from difficult circumstances. We have to find a way to solve this problem. And thus far, politics has interfered from both sides in finding thoughtful solutions.
Let me ask you about something a little bit closer to home. There was a bill at the state capitol that essentially would have required investigations into officer-involved shootings to be handled by law enforcement offices that were not with the officer that was involved in it, an outside office. This was a bill that you had opposed. Why did you not think that was a good idea?
Yeah, so it's, and that's where I think it gets misrepresented, so I appreciate you asking the question. I don't oppose the philosophy of having a different agency investigate an incident that is a shooting by an officer or deputy that takes the life of a community member. I think that it adds objectivity, removes any potential perception of partiality or bias, and that is the appropriate thing to do. I oppose the legislation because the legislation fell considerably short and failed to recognize all the complexities in these investigations.
It was a bill, though, that the attorney general was okay with, and it seemed like there were others in law enforcement who supported it. So what are the kinds of complexities and some of the maybe the nuances that it didn't address that you thought that maybe it needed to?
Well, yeah, I find that it was interesting because I've heard that argument also, and there was really only one labor union in law enforcement that supported it. If you speak to all the heads of office from around, you know, at least Maricopa County, the majority by far had concerns. The prosecutor's office isn't responsible for an investigation. They're just the recipients of it. So as much as I can appreciate their perspective, it's rooted more so in how they receive something versus how they're responsible to carry it out. So first and foremost, I'll use the name of an office. You know, Phoenix Police Department, because of the sheer volume of the population they serve, has a much higher number of these incidents. And that's circumstantial, not, you know, pointing fingers or saying why it occurs. So you can't expect that one other agency who is nowhere near size and capacity, use my own, we have about 750 sworn, where, you know, Phoenix is 2,500 to 3,000, they are prepared to take that on. So for any other agency to do it, you'd have to combine three or four different agencies in a rotation to accomplish it. At the same time, we have different labs that we use for evidence. We have different processes that we use. We have different policies as it relates to the administrative side of the investigation, which is internal affairs. So all these logistics have to be worked out in advance. The other challenge that comes with that is we have to make sure that the community feels confident. If today you say any particular agency gives you cause for concern when they investigate a shooting, then you're not suddenly confident in that agency the day after because they're investigating someone else's. So we have to weave in a heightened level of transparency and accountability. So all those dynamics have to be considered. It can't just be a two-line bill that says you will investigate someone else's shootings and they will investigate yours. You figure it out from here. There's no funding supporting it. You know, and this comes at a cost of overtime and resources and demands. Again, that can be disproportionate. So it is far more complex than something as fundamental as just making that singular statement.
Now, you have said in the past that you would like this goal achieved without needing legislation. Given the fact that it hasn't happened yet, do you think that's realistic?
I do, because I think what's going to happen is you're going to see that this law enforcement community is going to offer, you know, 2 to 3 viable options. You know, the one that we feel comfortable with, the one that we hope for, you know, and the one that maybe is the dream scenario. And we'll propose in a fashion and explain out why this would lead to the reform that our community not only calls for but demands. And then it becomes the responsibility of legislators or others to determine, are you willing to fund it so that we can get to that place that everybody feels confident in? Or are you suddenly going to say, oh, well, we're not willing to pay the price of admission on what it is that we're demanding of others? So I think we can offer the formula and we can offer potential solutions that would address this problem.
So before I let you go, let me ask you about COVID vaccination programs in the jails. How are those going and how are the mitigation efforts going? I would imagine it's a fairly challenging thing to try to keep people apart in tight, confined spaces like jails.
Extremely challenging. You know, we've benefited from our pattern of practice, just finding a way to reduce the population by asking our partner agencies to not book nonviolent misdemeanor offenders. We right now, our percentage of exposure and positive COVID tests in the jails is actually lower than the general population. We have administered a significant number, basically all the doses that have been allocated to us for the jail system have been delivered to the inmate population. What's surprising for me is, last I heard in the last briefing, about 50% of the inmates who were offered the vaccine decline. So as we get this concern from certain, you know, communities or activist groups worried for the well-being of the inmate population, as am I, because of COVID, it's interesting to see that when a potential solution, and I respect everyone's position on it, but a potential solution is offered that we have such a high ratio of inmates who are declining the opportunity to take the vaccine.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. That is Maricopa County Sheriff Paul Penzone. Sheriff Penzone, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Be well.
You bet. Have a great day.